do.
Follow the money.
That's what I always say. You always follow the money.
Yeah.
This is Follow the Money with Mitch Moss and Pauly Howard on VSiN.
For those of you tuning in, no, I am not Mitch Moss. I know I look very similar, but that is not the case today. Mitch Moss, Pauly Howard out getting some well-deserved vacation. Stormy Bonantoni, Jonathan Von Tobel warming up the chairs for the time being, live from downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino, Sirius XM channel 158, wherever you're watching or listening. We appreciate it. We are keeping tabs on both of the Olympic hockey games that are going on right now. The Team USA women up 6-0 over Italy in the second intermission. Team Canada up 3-1 over Switzerland right now as well. They are still currently covering that 2.5 puck line that I laid with the Canadians. Not loving my +7 goals for the Italians against Team USA. I bet it on principle, guys. That's so many goals.
This is the score that we need. Okay, for everybody to be happy, this is the score that would be, if this was the final, we would all be happy. I have -5.5 in game. You've got +7. Okay, so a 6-0 final is fine with me. So I will root for nothing.
You know, something tells me Team USA is going to score a bunch more goals still. Just because we're going to be in a position where with this, even with the game blown out, you're going to still see the goalie getting pulled here, some empty netters at the end, even if they don't drive a crazy amount of offense, which you would have to expect given the shot differential here that they are. It's in the 40s-4.
That to me is the big question. So you're down 6-0. There's 18 minutes left in the third. This is an elimination game. At what point do you pull your goaltender if you're Italy?
I don't know the answer to that, but you would anticipate early?
Because I would assume that as the...
But I just don't know if it really matters. At this point, do you just kind
But, you know, you would assume like as the two things are kind of wearing down, right? As you're continuing to get shut out, but as the game is wearing down, like at some point, those two things will meet together and you're like, all right, we got no choice. So we got to pull somebody here. And I would expect down 6-0, you know, in the first, what, 5 minutes? If you can't generate anything, don't you really start? I mean, with like 15 minutes, you're down 6 goals.
I hope not.
You're down 6. You got to generate that much in such a short amount of time. They would say it's getting late early. 40-4 right now. That's the other part about it. It's not like Italy's getting unlucky. Yeah. They can't even possess the puck.
No, this entire game has been played in their end.
Three power plays? So they've had three power plays.
And two shorthanded goals scored against them.
Two shorthanded goals against them, and they have 4 shots on the game.
God.
I told you,
so I made this bet, and as I was prepping for the show earlier this morning, I read an article from like a writer that I like, and he wrote, I think Team USA could be in double digits here, and that is potentially in play. Considering they just had a 5-goal second period, that's in play here. I mentioned this for our audience that wasn't with us. I feel like the fact that this was a 1-goal game after one, the shot differential was 20-2 for the U.S. women in the first, but the Italian goaltender was freaking all over the place, standing on her head, all the things. That was the worst possible outcome in the first period. Though on the surface, if you're not watching the game, you might think, wow, 1-0? Like, that's great. You're right in there for the +7 goals. No, because knowing what Team USA is, and that first intermission, mm-hmm. when they go to the locker room, they are MFing each other. They are saying we need to dominate this team. They are saying that Italy is nothing. All those things.
Whoa.
And that is just showing. We love our Italian brethren.
Let me ask you something.
I'm one of them. My last name is Bonantoni.
I mean, do you identify?
Which is actually, really... I think I told you this when I went to Italy last summer. My last name is... We Americanized it when they came over back in the day, threw a Y on the end of my last name. The proper pronunciation for my last name is Bonantono, but we all say like Bonantoni. So, yeah, what are you going to do? It was very embarrassing when I was checking in at my hotels.
The story really petered out. I thought you had something.
No, it was just embarrassing when I was checking in at hotels and like they look at my last name and just kind of look sideways at it. So,
my question for you is, as we're talking about this from the perspective of pulling a goaltender and they're getting shut out right now. So spread-wise, this is USA -7.5, -165. So obviously you would need 2 goals to get there and shut out Italy or whatever it is. You need to cover that number. The total for the game is 8.5 over +140. So you need 3 goals here. Again, to the question of...
That actually seems kind of...
Right. That's what I'm asking. So like to the
I'm
question
not gonna
of
bet it, but...
when you pull the goaltender, I mean, and how many... The other point of this is how many empty net goals do you give up before you stop? in terms of putting the goaltender back? That's the other question. You know more strategy about hockey than I do, so I would acquiesce to you on that. But my whole point here is, like you're talking about, I mean, over 8.5 at plus 145, you need three goals, but we are in a scenario in which Italy is going to pull their goaltender at some point and maybe even allow two empty netters before they maybe even think about giving up on the plan. So, and then even then, the other side of it is...
And it just flipped to 7.5 now. People were like gobbling up the plus money on that. So it's minus 200 now over 7.5.
Yeah. Okay.
But I do think, like, I agree with that thought process, though. I think that's probably worthwhile and maybe would have been a decent hedge attempt, but I also just don't want to go more in the hole on this game if I don't have to. That said, still to come this hour, coming up in about 10 to 15 minutes, VSiN's own Jensen Lewis is going to join the program. We're going to talk through some college basketball. He's got plays for today. Major League Baseball, former MLB pitcher. We'll get some of his big picture thoughts as pitchers and catchers have all reported now. Also some college baseball. It's college baseball opening day, so the road to Omaha starts now. End of the hour, we will also get into the NBA All-Star weekend, talk some three-point contest, dunk contest, all of that stuff. But so a news item that was kind of top of my mind today that I thought was interesting circulating on social media was the NFL memo informing all 32 teams that it has prevailed in its grievance against the NFLPA in its team report cards. An arbiter determined that the PA's conduct violated the CBA and ordered them to stop making public any future report cards that they put together. Billionaires hate accountability.
Yes.
That's so funny to me.
Yeah, they do.
They've been so bent out of shape on some of the grades that some of these organizations have been given.
Well, from what I understand, I don't know if these were real reports, but I think it was Woody Johnson, owner of the Jets, that was one of the ones, the leader in the clubhouse that put the kibosh here.
Who got a net flash?
I was going to say, and oddly enough, the Jets got a net flash year. So you can kind of put those two together at this point right now.
J.J. Watt tweeting about it said the NFL won't let actual players grade the workplace they attend every single day, but they will allow a third party grading service to display their rankings of players on national television every Sunday night, which is true. They do have those PFF rankings on individual players. Alvin Kamara.
I don't think there's any correlation there, but okay.
You know, I get what he's saying, and I actually think that's a pretty good flex. Alvin Kamara saying suggesting players should make one and just tweet it out at the end of the year on their own.
Sure.
Just it can still be done. But I just think it's funny. Like, it's one of these things that has, for me, as like people that do content, people that take in the league every day, that is something I look forward to every year, seeing whose grades are the worst and seeing if any of these teams make changes. And we've seen a lot of them make changes, like the Chargers. I think one of the things that comes through on these report cards each year is how you treat families. They went from 30th in the NFL 2 years ago in how they treat families to 5th last year. So, like, oftentimes the grade that you get here has invoked change in the organization in a positive way. And yet they're like, we can't have this. We can't have this out there.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. There's obviously not much impact in our world, but I will say this, you know, to wrap this and bring this to the Jets as a whole, this is exactly what this organization has been. And you even go to this offseason where the whole thing with Aaron Glenn, his defensive coordinator position, that he didn't want a big name coordinator. So now he has to run it. And just the little things that they do all the time to get in their own way, and why they're such a poorly run organization, and why you look at this team this year again and see, all right, this is going to be one of the lower power rated teams in the NFL. And tying these together, it's a loose string, but still, this is a poorly run organization. They are not a well-run team, and they have really no direction, and that has been part of the reason why they have been in the cellar for so long.
We also saw some big news in college football yesterday. Ole Miss quarterback Trinidad Chambliss was granted a preliminary injunction that would allow him to play for the Rebels this year with a 6th season of eligibility, but the case might not be over. The NCAA can appeal what was a Mississippi Supreme Court decision after they denied Chambliss his request for a medical redshirt for the 2022 season at Ferris State, where, for anyone who doesn't know much about this story, he had really severe tonsillitis that year. And it created some respiratory issues for him. So he redshirted his first season, didn't play at all that entire second season with this medical issue. But at the time, didn't submit for a medical redshirt then. Now he is. And that's kind of been his big argument with the NCAA, is that I'm not trying to game the system like we've seen some other people, which I agree with from that standpoint. The judge, though, Robert Whitwell, which a lot of people have pointed out, who has a law degree from Ole Miss, is the one that made the decision and said the NCAA acted in bad faith to deny him an additional year of eligibility, hence why they have made this decision.
What do you think of Ole Miss now? He's back.
I mean, how good are they going to be? The NCAA can still appeal, so this isn't over yet. However,
let's assume he comes back.
I think that's huge for them.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, your secondary option is Deuce Knight, which is going to be a step down from what you had in Trinidad Chambliss, who really showed what his worth and value was to the team last year. I'm not saying that he makes them gets them back to a semifinal, and that should be the expectation. Sure. But I think that they're a contender in the SEC. I think that they are a playoff team with him. The carryover that you have with Pete Golding at head coach as well, the leadership that he instilled, the confidence he brought that group, and the multifaceted skill set he has, why couldn't they be?
Yeah. I mean, he answered some questions, obviously, with that run and the way that he was coaching him, that he can get a lot out of a team. So there was a lot of people that I think talked about Ole Miss as a one. I mean, a lot of us assumed that they were just going to get eliminated. But the other part of it is that they weren't really a threat because of the change of head coach. And it seems like Golding maybe has an opportunity to really do something here.
I think so, too. In part, the statement from the NCAA in retaliation from this, quote, "We continue to defend the NCAA's eligibility rules against repeated attempts to rob future generations of the opportunity to compete in college and experience life-changing opportunities only college sports can create." And I would say this is not the right fight for that. In my view, that's not what this is with Trinidad Chambliss. But the professional athletes that are trying to come back to college, that's what we should eliminate. The guys that are getting ninth years of eligibility, that's what we should eliminate. What we should not, or what we should also eliminate, actually, is paying full price for gas. You don't have to. Download the free Upside app. Earn real cash back every time you fill up. It's quick. It's easy. It adds up. Drivers are earning $200 to $300 a year just by buying the gas they're already getting. Use promo code SPORTS for 25 cents back per gallon on your first tank. Cash out anytime in your bank account or e-gift cards like Amazon. Download the free Upside app now. Again, use that promo code SPORTS for a limited time. 25 cents per gallon. Offers vary by user and location. Upside.com for details. Jensen Lewis joining us next right here on Follow the Money.
You're here because you want an edge. That's what separates listeners from winners. But let's be real, mindset alone doesn't get bets home. Pros win because they've got the tools, the data, and the discipline. And now so can you. Visa Pro gives you access to the same real-time insights the sharps use. No secrets, no fluff, just actionable info that moves markets. Tap the link and see why serious bettors are turning knowledge into profit with Visa Pro.
This is Follow the Money on VSiN.
The panic officially setting in. Team USA up 6-0 right now over Italy. Shot differential 42-5. This is the perfect final score for JVT and I. JVT laid a 5.5 goals with Team USA live. I took 7 goals with the Italians. Not pre-flop, 9:30 to go. So prayers up for your girl. Meanwhile, Team Canada did extend their lead 4-1 over Switzerland. Mitch Marner to Sid the Kid. They're in the third period. So 4-1. They are covering the 2.5 goals right now. 12:32 to go in that one. As we get into some college basketball, college baseball is today's opening day. Major League Baseball is right upon us as well. Jensen Lewis joins us here on the Progressive Guest Line, host, of course, of VSiN by the Book, 7 to 10 Eastern each and every weekday here on the network. You are joining forces with Adam Burke to put together our MLB betting guide. Jensen, what has that experience been like? How are you doing?
Back to the college days, Stormy and JVT. Most writing I think I've done in a 2-week timeline. JVT, I'm sure, can sympathize doing it for the betting guides on the basketball side. But excited to get it out. And as you guys know, when you get it on deadline, of course, a boatload of moves happen right after you submit everything. So we are going to have some of those, at least on my side, that will be dated by the time it comes out on the 17th. But all in all, always a great thing to do and kind of get primed and some angles for people to be able to leverage not only for season-long props, but also for some win totals as well.
As Adam Burke can attest, I've never met a deadline that I can't make. So let's see if I'm sure he had a better time working with you. Let's say
he forgot his final score prediction for the Super Bowl. He didn't. That's all you had to do was just the final score prediction. Come on, man. Six. Anyways, go ahead.
All right. What was your favorite thing to write about? What was the thing that when you latched onto it, when you saw it, what's a nugget that you can give our audience that look forward to in the guide?
Yeah, JVT, when you look at when the win totals come out, I'm not usually a person that will bet them right away, because usually when you get to camp, you start to see injuries and also ones that are kind of under the radar that all of a sudden come up in the first week once reporters get there. So I think the hamate stuff, and I'm sure you guys have touched on it throughout the week, is really significant when you look at some of the player props. When I was writing up the Arizona Diamondbacks, One of my bold takes was that Corbin Carroll would finish top three in the MVP voting. That's not going to be the case anymore. So for me and for people that don't realize it, it's not just the recovery timeline to get back to play. It's the significant loss of power and the slug ability for probably half the season, if not upwards of the entire year. So that really drastically affects at least my handicap of when you're looking at, you know, season total home runs, if you're looking at guys that are going to be in the awards markets too. So that was one that stood out. I'm not as worried about Francisco Lindor. I think they knew it early on. It was just a matter of, did he want to try and play through it, or was it smarter to knock it out? It sounds like he's not going to miss the amount of time that maybe a Jackson Holiday would. So I would say Arizona's an intriguing team. I like the Giants in the West. I think Stormy San Francisco guys are going to really be much better under Tony Vitello. The jump from college into the professional ranks, I think he's going to get acclimated much quicker than maybe the outside critics will look at. So I think the Giants could surprise, and I really like their rotation as well as the additions in their lineup. I'd say the American League, and I'll stay in the Central, guys. I think the White Sox over on their win total. I think they're going to be much better under Will Venable in year two. Mutaki Murakami, I think, is the real deal, and the power could be there as well. I wouldn't be shocked if he's a 30-plus home run guy and squarely in the Rookie of the Year voting there on the American League side. So maybe the teams designated as the worst or the bottom of the barrel, I think there is some value of playing some of those win totals over that look very, very diffused at the moment.
I'm curious, Jensen, to go back really quickly to Tony Vitello, who comes in for San Francisco. The dynamic of coming from college to the pros. In the NFL, we talk about it all the time about, hey, you know, you have dominion over these kids, and you get to, hey, it's my way or the highway. And it's a way different dynamic when you're talking about millionaires. But the sport is obviously different, and in baseball, it's a little bit more cerebral. You're making choices. Does that transition from college to pros maybe make it a little bit easier for a baseball manager than a football coach?
I think what's unique, JBT, and had a chance to cover Tennessee a handful of times this past year, he is so intense. And that, to me, is the differential of this year and kind of the trial of a six-month marathon. You're not going to be able to have that intensity day in and day out. And you're right to highlight, these are way different personalities, multimillionaires. These guys, it's their own career. They don't need a manager kind of telling them what to do and what not to do. So I think his attention to detail is really going to catch a lot of those guys in a positive way. He is really going to drill down on the fundamentals. It was a hallmark for him at the University of Tennessee. They're a really fundamentally sound team defensively. They hit an absolute boatload of home runs. I think he's going to infuse not only the youth there, and we're kind of seeing it now, Stephen voting Cleveland here the last couple of years. You're going to see it with Butera there in D.C., although I think the Nationals are not anywhere near a contending window here, at least this season and next. But that youth movement in that managerial seat, Skip Schumacher, I think it's going to be phenomenal with the Rangers. A lot of respect around the league. He got to learn under Bruce Bochy. So it's about surrounding yourself with a great staff. Tony Vitello has done that. I think the Giants can surprise out there in the National League West.
As your boy Dave Ross likes to say, our closer, Jensen Lewis, joining us here on the Progressive Guest Line, host of VSiN by the Books. You can follow him on X at JLew50. That is the word 50 spelled out. We'll get to college baseball in a minute before we let you go, but I know you've got a ton of college basketball plays today, and I couldn't help but, I mean, all of them are essentially on totals. Have you found that totals has been a more profitable way for you to go this season? What's the angle there and your favorite play of the day?
Stormy, this has been the worst for me in basketball. I can't hit water falling out of a boat right now. So if you want to just fade me, that may be the profitable way to go right now. But we hit a nice outright on the Milwaukee Bucks yesterday over the Thunder. And then transitioning to, as I said with Dave this morning, the Smarty Pants plays here. A lot of Ivy League trends that kind of surface for us. Looking at a couple of them, and speaking of those totals, some unders, teams that have been really good to the under here. Looking at Cornell in their games, they've been very, very solid to the under. Also looking at UPenn there as they host Columbia. So this is such a unique slate because it is kind of like under the radar as far as just the handful of ranked games. Obviously Michigan State, at St. Louis there in Miami of Ohio. That is the one over that I have tonight. The Red Hawks there. In my neck of the woods here in the state of Ohio, they will take on the Ohio Bobcats. I do like the over. I bought a couple of points here. I got it to 161.5. I think it's upwards of 164 right now. But I think that's the unique part about where we are in this college calendar is that I mean, it's really sweaty for the totals, but I got to catch some lightning in a bottle. Otherwise, I'm not going to be able to pay for a vacation with Michelle when we leave tomorrow.
I like it. All right. Well, college baseball opening day coming up here. So what should we know? I know we have a big matchup in terms of the top 25 teams that you might be familiar with.
My Commodores just tied it up right now. I got the live stats up as I'm talking with you guys. They are in the Shriners Children's Classic down at the ballpark at Arlington, or Globe Life Field there, home of the Rangers. Really a unique setup in college baseball, guys, and we see it similarly in college basketball. Early season tournaments, you know, getting a lot of these colder weather teams that will come south and be able to play in some of these controlled environments. Also out in Surprise, Arizona, a great amount of talent out there. We'll see a team in Arizona that I covered in the Super Regionals in Chapel Hill. They're out there the late game. But what I really like, and as an SEC guy, I think we get a bounce back this year, guys, from the Southeastern Conference. They really took it on the chin. My Vandy boys, number one overall seed, could not even get to their regional final in the Nashville regional last year. An embarrassment, to say the least, for Tim Corbin and that crew. They're going to try and get back there with a boatload of great arms. It's kind of been a pipeline and a foundation for them. I think Arkansas is loaded for bear.
Oh no!
I think Jensen froze up a little bit there, but I love the approach though that this is going to be an up year once again for the SEC once we get to Omaha. And our whole crew had the pleasure of going out to Charles Schwab Field last year. Spent the weekend in Omaha, which was a finish your thought on Arkansas and some others, Jensen. I heard we got you back.
I think Dave Van Horn tried to freeze my feed as I was saying I really like them, but usually Arkansas will find a way to beat themselves. And you know, when you've got the likes of the defending champs in LSU, Texas is going to be up there as well. We had Noah Bienick of the College Baseball Insiders on with us live from Arlington this morning, and he likes the Longhorns as his top play to win it all. He also brought up Kentucky as a 45-1 shot, and I think the Wildcats will surprise some people, not only with their rotation, but they've got a nice balance of their offense. If I'm looking any further, a team that I had in the Athens regional, guys, Georgia already off and rolling. They call it feeding the trees out there. It's one of the most prestigious venues, but also one of the most ridiculous power spots. It's like Yankee Stadium, but on a college environment out there to right field. So I think Georgia, they were the best in the transfer portal, guys, this offseason. They brought in a boatload of talent on both sides of the ball. So I think the Bulldogs going to be heard from here late into the postseason.
I'm about it. The road to Omaha starts now, Jensen. Thank you so much. We appreciate the time.
You got it. Thanks, guys.
Jensen Lewis, everybody. Great to note as well, throughout the MLB and college baseball season, Jensen's going to join us on Money Moves each and every week, talking through some different things and talking about Omaha and everything. He mentioned covering Super Regional last year. He has a great job in the postseason with ESPN calling games, so he's very close to the college sport. You hear that music? We got to step aside here real quickly as we sweat out the final 4 minutes of this USA-Italy game. Still 6-0 right now, and Canada extends their lead out 5-1 on a Nathan MacKinnon goal. We'll be right back.
This is Follow the Money on VSiN.
50 seconds to glory. Hold on, Italy.
Hold
please.
On. Relax.
6-0 right now. I took 7 goals with the Italians. JVT laid 5.5 with Team USA. Let's not have any mayhem happen. 35 seconds to go. Oh, my whole body's hot right now.
I mean, just let them play. Yeah, just keep this going.
You need to talk.
Well, I mean, so do you, but we're watching this.
I'm more stressed than you. You know that Italy's not going to score.
Well, you don't know that at all.
We definitely know that. We definitely know the Italians aren't going to score. It's just a matter of if Team USA.
Hockey is a ridiculously stupid sport.
I will give the Italians so much credit, though.
For getting their rear ends kicked?
For how hard they are still skating here in this game.
Congrats. You lost 6-0. They were awful in the first two periods.
You know what they say about good teams and great teams, JVT?
I have no idea.
Yes, you do. And I hate you so much for this. But, okay, I'm stressed. We had a little stoppage there briefly. They're about to drop the puck.
Oh, are you talking about the good teams, bad teams cover, whatever it is?
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Good teams
win.
We're locked in.
Good team
win.
We got 23 seconds
here. Great teams cover. Can the Italians just hold on one more?
I'm telling you.
And you said it. We were talking about it. They couldn't pull their goalie.
Yeah.
Because of how much they've just been playing in their own end the whole time.
How much time do you think in this period they have spent in their own end?
I would be fascinated to see what that. What would you give the Italians a minute that they've been out of it?
Yeah. I don't think it was more than just a minute. Like, they are getting absolutely destroyed. And yet here they are. Yeah, 6.7 seconds left.
The shot differential, for those of you listening in your car at home, don't have this on the screen.
Come on.
Team USA has outshot Team Italy 51-6. 4, 3, 2, 1.
We got it?
Follow us, baby! Game over. Now I can nux you, and come then you high five me.
Come on, you're supposed those. That's a dap.
I am so happy right now. I'm so happy.
You gotta try it again.
Let's
go. Dap. There you go. Come on now.
I tried to go for the double. Well, I'm just embarrassing myself left and right.
Okay, yes,
right
you
now.
Do. All right, try it again. You got a hook when you go. There you go.
I almost came out of my chair on that one. Yes. Did you hear the emotion? I'm so pumped right now. That's great. Okay,
yeah, snap after
6-0 final. Team USA, they do not cover the 7.5 closing number on the puck line, although just another dominant performance for them. They are going to win gold in the Olympics.
I am telling you this right now. What a run in Olympic hockey for me.
You're on a heater with the live play. All
I know,
live
this
plays.
Is insane. We'll take it. We'll take it.
I don't think that this is going
to...
This
card.
Was an elimination game, by the way. So the women are out of the preliminary round, whereas the men just got theirs underway a couple days ago. So this is a quarterfinal matchup. Italy is now done. Team USA advances to the semifinals. This was... I don't know how significant this will move their odds to win it all. Prior to this game, they're -320. We had the conversation with Mike Palm on the program this week about how his opinion was... It's going to be a collision course on the men's and women's side, most likely. USA, Canada, going to go to head-to-head in the gold medal game. If that is the case, just wait for the rematch with Team Canada for the gold medal game, because that number is going to be significantly lower, you would anticipate, especially if they get their captain back.
Yeah.
On the men's side, where things sit right now, we still have a couple minutes to go, I believe, although my box score refresher is not going great on this game. 5-1 at last check for Team Canada. This is one of those, unless they transition it over.
Right here. You got 2 minutes, 50 seconds left.
2:50 to go, still 5-1. We were talking about this in a commercial break earlier. The firepower that this freaking Canadian team has, you look at these goals and just the line combos you have. The first goal of the day on the power play, Makar to MacKinnon to McDavid for the first goal. MacKinnon to Celebrini, Makar to Marner to Crosby, Celebrini, McDavid to MacKinnon. I mean, it's just, they are so good. I placed a +114 bet on them earlier this morning to win gold. Ultimately, obviously, I am pro USA. I would love America to come out and win their first gold medal since the Miracle on Ice game in 1980. That would be unbelievable. What do I think is going to happen? I think we get a Team USA, Team Canada head to head, and I think Canada wins it. So if I can still get plus money on this team now, I'm going to take it, because there are a handful of books that already have them as -110.
Okay. All right. I might tell you on that.
I think it's worthwhile. They look so fast. They look so dominant.
Hey, man,
they're so skilled. And
you've been doing well in hockey. You gave yourself crap. I mean, this Olympics, you've been doing well. I've just been playing in game.
I appreciate it. This was and the goaltending has been good for Canada so far. So I think that's the big key for them. That was the biggest question mark coming in, is what is Jordan Binnington going to be? Oof. He gets the shutout in game one. He doesn't play the second leg of the back-to-back. So Logan Thompson got the start today, but even he just given up the one goal on 24 shot attempts. So
I feel lost right now.
What do you mean?
I need something else to. We need something else to like intensely stare at and sweat. This is. I'm lost now.
This absolutely has made the first hour and a half of the show fly.
I have nothing left to live for now. I mean, come on now.
What else is live today? Do we have any like slalom for you to get into? Some luge?
Hammer some in-game stuff with that?
That's you know what we should do. What? What do you
just? No, I'm just saying.
Did you just add something?
No. Just, you know, finally added up in the account. It just makes me feel a little bit better that I bought that stupid Magnemite for $160. It was only worth $30. So,
Speed skating. We have the speed skating final in the 1500 meter. If you want to dive in.
No, I mean, no? I mean, okay, you know me. Like, I enjoy the sport of hockey. I have a baseline of hockey knowledge enough to kind of mess with it in game and do all that kind of stuff.
The 4x7.5 kilometer relay and skiing.
I would need to at least watch and understand what I'm talking about. I barely know what I'm talking about now.
So something you do know a lot about, and this will just be kind of the tip of the iceberg of us getting into this breakdown.
Con Knipple.
We'll talk about it a little bit more. Actually, yes, Con Knipple is your favorite in the 3-point contest as the NBA All-Star break.
I bet him.
Begins today. You did?
Yeah.
Talk me through it.
He's just awesome. I think, look, there's not really like a ton of hardcore.
Your Hornets glasses are showing.
Sure, I think so. I mean, there's not a lot of hardcore analysis for the most part. I think he's got a pretty easy jump shot. And I think that he is, as we talked about many times, he's been absolutely incredible. And with the ease of his jump shot, I think it's going to be an event that he can win. One of the best things that I've looked at, I think when you talk about, and I think it was David Thorpe who came on many years ago, but he gave us some really good analysis. You see the odds here, by the way. Con Knipple, 3-1. Damian Lillard with a torn ACL, plus 475. This is
Achilles,
to win a three-point
right?
contest. What am I talking about here? Jamal Murray at plus 550. Tyrese Maxey, 650. Donovan Mitchell, 650. Devin Booker, plus 750. Norman Powell, 8-1. And then Bobby Portis, 11-1. And I'll focus on like Powell for a second because that's something that was really stuck out to me. But I think it was Thorpe. I'll give him credit for it. Malik Beasley, who, by the way, just signed with Bad Bunny's Puerto Rican-based basketball team. He was in this one year, and I had bet him, but he had such a good point about, like, the, not violence of his jump shot, but he's got a very high jump shot. Goes up really, so it's hard to do that consistently over the course of a lot of rounds. You kind of want an easier-looking jump shot, something that's not going to fatigue you over the course of it. I think Knipple's got that. He's obviously very, very good as well. He's young, which I think is going to help him out here, too. And look, he's, for a reason, he is the best shooter right now in this field outside of Damian Lillard when Lillard's at full health, and we know that he's not. I know he's capable of performing here, but you'd have to wonder as well, Damian Lillard over the course of multiple rounds of this thing, how he feels, what it looks like. So give me Knipple. I think he's the guy. Bet him at 3-1.
So can I ask you a stupid question about Damian Lillard, though?
Sure.
Because obviously, like, he has not played a minute this season. He's done for the year with the Achilles. Does that hypothetically, like, what has he been doing this entire time that he has been rehabbing? Probably just static. Getting up shots.
Yeah.
Could that hypothetically actually be advantageous in something like this where that's what he's been doing more than anything else?
Oh yeah, I think so. My question is more of the longevity of the event more so than his ability to actually hit the shots.
So, and I will tell you, there are, for anyone who is unfamiliar with some of the changes that have been made in three-point contest over recent years, five racks, each rack has five balls, four of the racks has the money ball at the end worth 2 points. Their fifth rack is all money balls, so each one of those worth 2 points. You also have the addition of the three-point starry range balls. You get two of those that are each worth 3 points for a 40-point max. So, yes, that is a lot of shots that you have to get off in this. There are some other markets for the three-point contest in addition to just who the outright winner is going to be. You can also bet to qualify for the final. Con Knipple, your boy, minus 110 in that. Round one scores over a certain points threshold for round one, whether a player will make one or both of those shots from starry range. So there are a few different, like, they're giving you a lot of options for this thing if you want to get involved. And this is the star of All-Star Weekend now.
I think so. Yes, I think so. I'm glad you put now at the end of that because it used to be the dunk contest. It's been 10 years since Aaron Gordon and Zach LaVine went at it as members of the Magic and the Minnesota Timberwolves, respectively, in a really good dunk contest, maybe one of the, actually the last great dunk contest. But at this point, to me, this is the real only bettable event. This is the one that you really want to watch as well. It's an easy watch too. So this is one I get excited for every year. And then outside of that, I mean, whatever. But well, this is the one that I'm in for.
And that's the thing I was thinking about too, even in the dunk contest this year, at least there was some fun with the whole Mac McClung thing and what is he going to do next? And he's doing it year after year. He's not even in it this year.
Yeah.
So it's not even really a familiar name that you're used to seeing from that standpoint. Did you get, and we can talk more about All-Star Weekend in general a little bit later, we'll revisit this, but do you care about anything else betting wise when it comes to the weekend, the Rising Stars game?
Not or really. I think they're just near impossible handicaps outside of a couple of years when they were changing the format and maybe books didn't account for whatever. And so you could get some edges there when it comes to the total, whatever it is. I don't think there's really anything that you can look at that you can handicap and feel comfortable.
We have gone final in Milan for the men's hockey game as well. Canada beat Switzerland 5-1. So 2-0 with your play 3-0 for us on the hockey plays today. So hopefully we can keep that rolling. We got to step aside, kicking off the next segment. I thought it was going to be hour three. It's not. We got 50 more minutes this hour, but we'll be back. Follow the money next.
This is Follow the Money on VSiN.
back here on Follow the Money. Stormy Buontoni, Jonathan Von Tobel in for the guys. Live in downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino. Had a fun sweat over the last hour and a half on the ice for the Olympic hockey on both the men's and women's side. Team Canada ends up coming through. They cover the 2.5 on the puck line over Switzerland today, getting it done. A few of those goal scorers to come through for you. Nathan MacKinnon, have a day. 2 goals, 2 assists for him. He was plus 120 for an anytime goal. I mean, a lot of these guys were such short odds. McDavid, plus 140 for an anytime goal. He also cashed first goal for you, plus 950, added 3 assists as well. Macklin Celebrini, plus 190 for an anytime goal, has a goal and an assist. Crosby, who 2-1 here to have an anytime goal. He had multiple assists in the first game, couldn't get anything through himself. He does today, though. On the USA women's side, that was a sweat after. So it was a slow start for Team USA, despite outshooting Italy 20-2. They only got 1 goal on the board on a power play. Second period, we see this goal scoring explosion where they put up a 5 spot. No goals in the third period. So 6-0 ends up being our final there. Team USA wins, but does not cover the closing 7.5 on the puck line. Some of the Hannah Bilka, she had minus 135 for an anytime goal. That gets home for you. But 7-1 if you had the last score on Bilka, who has been unbelievable so far for Team USA. Kendall Coyne had 2. Layla Edwards had 1. All over the board here for the USA women. Fun day having the... I love when we have live action. In our Money Moves window, we very rarely get games. And so it's kind of been fun to have this.
Yes, it's actually, it's been great. I've loved every second of it.
You have because you've been adding to your bankroll.
This has been a fun run of in-game Olympic hockey. I have no idea I wouldn't say I have no idea, but this has been fun. I have a new appreciation for betting hockey live.
I'm happy. That's good. Maybe we can do that a little bit more throughout the season.
Do we have day games ever?
No, I was going to say maybe we could hang out and watch game, be friends.
You didn't invite me to your Super Bowl party, so I don't think so.
You said you had plans already. You wanted to watch it at
a
book. You didn't have technical plans, but you wanted to watch it at a book.
No,
in my house, I could be a bookie for you that day.
The quote I used that day was just, "Let's see where the wind takes me." That was it.
Okay. Do you want to hit on some big news in the college basketball world over the last 24 to 48 hours? North Carolina. We do. 3 top 25 teams in action after what was a pretty dull slate yesterday. Although, credit our boy Tim Murray. He gave out the Denver play against South Dakota State. Yeah. That comes through. It doesn't matter how it cashes, as long as it does. Doesn't matter who it is, where you watch it, get it done. So that was good. But one of the big dogs, North Carolina, Caleb Wilson, out indefinitely, has a fracture in his left hand. No timetable on his return. And for a Tar Heels team that had, exceeded expectations the way they have, playing as well as they do, he's their lead scorer, averaging just shy of 20 points per game, 9.5 rebounds per game. You wonder what this could mean for them moving forward. We talk a lot about those key cogs and the heartbeat players. He's kind of been that guy for them.
Yes, absolutely. I'm going to be curious to see how this affects them on both sides. But either way, this North Carolina team looked like it was going to be a real threat, I think, in the big picture. So this might be something, obviously, that derails them a bit here. But in the ACC as a whole, I like what Mike Palm told us yesterday. We talked a little bit about Duke, and he called them a one-player team. And I think that's a fair criticism of what the Blue Devils are. So as we kind of look at these teams and the contenders coming out of the ACC, Duke's obviously at the top of the list. But looking at a few of these others, it's a decent conference, but not a ton outside of UNC at full strength and Duke that you're looking at. Clemson at times, where you're looking at Virginia to say that there's some legitimate threats for a national title.
As far as the games go today, I did bet a couple things. I don't know if you did today as well, but one of the plays that I did have in pocket, and we'll do our in-pocket plays, obviously, at the end of the next hour as well, but just to get ahead of it, I'm on Michigan State today, lane 1.5 at Wisconsin. I joked with Greg Peterson when we had him on the program earlier, both of these teams, coincidentally, coming off of overtime wins against Illinois, but the one for Wisconsin, much more recent, and I think a very clear potential letdown spot for them. Michigan State, they are well-rested, haven't played that since that last game last Saturday, so a lot more time to separate and prepare. They just feel like the side, especially with how good their defense is. I liked the point that Greg made about their three-point shooting, too, even that being something that's better coincidentally on the road than it is at home. When I was going through the ratings in KenPom, number 10 ranked in the country, but number 10 at KenPom as well, I felt like a lot of things just kept showing up Sparty for me in a tough schedule spot for Wisconsin.
Yeah, I think that makes some sense. I mean, when you look at Wisconsin, too, one of the things that I think a lot of people were looking at with Wisconsin and kind of hoping that maybe they were going to lose that game against Illinois on Tuesday and you'd be better spot situationally. But you're coming off of two overtime games and a big upset of Illinois on the road. Now coming back home after both of those games, it's kind of a tough spot to be in. So I know situational handicapper is probably more in your direction when it comes to Michigan State. So I think that that makes a ton of sense if you're going to play against them here today.
Miami of Ohio laying.
Ooh, buddy.
So you've tried to pick your moments to fade this team on the spread.
Yes, you're right. The spread, right? The Kent State game did not get there, but we had the UMass game, the Buffalo game. So there's been those spots that we've tried here. Dude, we should have gotten Kent State.
You should have. That was the overtime.
That was Kent State inbounding the ball with 13 seconds left, up by one, I think it was, and turning the ball over and eventually going to overtime. Yeah, we should have gotten that one. But either way, yeah, so I make that noise because you're right. I see this, and I'm like, man, 9.5, that seems like a lot for my – because here's the thing. Miami-Ohio is obviously a very good team. This is not to make them out to not be one. But as I keep saying with them, and see, market's on my side here because it's down to 8.5 – They're such a good one-shot offense that you wonder if that expires at some point, but it doesn't really matter at this point. And if there was a team that I wanted to go to battle with against Miami, Ohio, I would want a better team than what the Ohio Bobcats are going to give me, and that's what my problem is here. I think you can make the argument that the number's a little too high just because Miami, Ohio is at the top of its power rating and they haven't really been covering numbers. But the Bobcats' offense has been pretty bad. They're 9th in the MAC in terms of offensive efficiency. They're okay, middle of the pack on defense, top 5. But along the perimeter in two folds, they've been terrible. They can't shoot the ball, and their perimeter defense has been abysmal. 30.3% from beyond the arc against MAC opponents, and they're giving up 36% from beyond the arc. Against Miami of Ohio, if you got a leaky perimeter defense, that is a poor sign here. So I wanted to play it. The market is heading in that direction, so I missed out on the 10.5. I was a little too hesitant there.
Yep. The total also seeing a slight move toward the over from 162 up to 163.5. Miami of Ohio is averaging a Division I high, 92.7 points per game. They're tops in effective field goal percentage. Mm-hmm. That said, as I brought up earlier, strength of schedule for this team, 350th in the country, not ideal. Did you agree or disagree with Greg's sentiment that they could get tripped up and lose a game or two?
Oh, yeah.
And still be in the tournament? Well, so I wonder, because looking at some of the numbers, they're minus 230 right now to make the NCAA tournament, plus 175 to miss. If, yes, the obvious trip up spot is Bowling Green coming next week. Could it be a situation, though, where when it rains, it pours, you maybe lose two games, then you are in a position in the tournament where you have to win and maybe even have to beat Akron?
Yeah. I mean, clearly your margin of error is thin if you're Miami, Ohio. I think you can lose one and be okay for the most part. But, I mean, if you lose, I think it depends also where that loss comes as well. You know, if they're,
I mean, but they've had these close calls, and that's why I bring it up.
No,
it feels like it's going to happen. They're not going to go fully clean throughout the course of the season. And if they do, like, power to you. That's hard to do.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, look, they're a team that is built on tempo and their 3-point shooting. They take over 47% of their shots from beyond the arc in conference play. So what does that mean? Well, once you start to get to these settings, if you're talking about a tournament, whatever it is, you go cold one time in a single elimination tournament, and all of a sudden it's over and you might be eliminated. And so I would agree with you that, again, we talk about like variance and how much they shoot in these close calls. This is not an anti-Miami thing. It's just a kind of logic thing. At some point, you would assume that there's going to be a rock that you stumble over. In the grand scheme of things, do they have a strong enough resume to look at this and go, you know what, they're good enough here? Their best win is over Akron. That's the 65th ranked team in KenPom. That's not really a fantastic win to build a resume on. And if you lose one, God forbid you lose two, then I think you're cooked outside of needing to win the automatic bid for the MAC. But I think you can, I think they're good enough and they've proven enough that they can lose one potentially here. I mean, Stormy, they don't really have anybody on the schedule at all. You took like their non-con, Old Dominion, Air Force, Mercyhurst, Arkansas Pine Bluff, yeah. UNC Greensboro, Indiana East. There's nothing on here that is really strong from a resume standpoint.
And that's why I say, for anyone who doesn't know how many teams there are in college basketball, it's like 365.
Yeah.
Their strength of schedule is 350th. Like it is not good, the level of competition that they've played throughout the course of the season. The other nationally ranked game that we have, St. Louis laying down from 18.5 to 17.5 at Loyola Chicago. Total ticked up here a little bit from 154 to 155.5. A really big spread, but a really bad Ramblers team.
Ignoring the game of the night then, huh?
Well, we have another segment. I was going to lead the next segment. UNLV, go fight with. Right. Although they probably won't do that.
No, they're big double, they're big underdogs, and it's a big revenge spot for the Broncos. We'll save it, though. We'll save it. Okay. I didn't have anything here. I agree with the sentiment of taking 18.5 when it was up there against St. Louis and what Greg was talking with us a little bit earlier in the program.
Well, I do have a bet in this game, so we can hit that and, of course, the Mountain West action that we have on deck later on today in college basketball. That Michigan State line, by the way, we're seeing it tick a little bit back and forth between the 1.5 and 2.5, depending on where you look. So it looks like they are getting bet more often than not on the road at Wisconsin. We got to step aside. Now we are for real. I got ahead of myself last segment. Kicking off hour 3 of the program coming up after this.